We're holding over here in the beginning. We started the second chapter in Shara Yichud V'Amuna, and we are holding on page 154. The line we're holding by, in the second line from the top, the line begins with the word Yesh Me'ayin, and we are holding by the words V'hu Pele Gado, by the third word V'hu Pele Gado. Okay. So this chapter, Perek Bey, is a continuation to the first chapter of what we learned. The theme, the main theme, the main point of the earlier chapter was God's continuous involvement in creation. That creation has to be regenerated every moment. It's not something that was once happened and then it has its sufficient power to exist, but rather Hashem has to continuously regenerate all of existence from absolute nothingness into existence every moment to bring the world into beingness. And for that he brought the idea that everything in this world has a life, even inanimate objects have a life to them, have a soul, or from the Arizal. And the soul is that life force that is giving the world its existence every moment. And these are the name. He says this is contained in the Hebrew letters of the name, which Hashem has spoken to create the world. Those letters, which Hashem called the creation into existence, they are invested and clothed within the creation to create it every second. In chapter 2, in Perek Beis, the Tanya introduces, takes the same idea, and he explains it, however, rationally, based on the laws of physics. In the Perek Aleph, he just said this is the way it is. Why? Because the Torah says so. He brought proof from the Torah, from a pasuk. It says that Hashem's words stand in the heaven. What does it mean Hashem's word is in the heaven? Which words of Hashem? The words that Hashem said, Yehi Rakia, those words continuously create the heaven. However, in this chapter, he says, well, this can also be understood. This makes sense. It has to be this way. Scientifically, it needs to be this way. And why is that? And the main idea is that when something new is being generated, something of a true novelty, something that didn't exist earlier, so the force that is bringing that, that is causing that novel change, that newness to whatever entity, whatever substance, that force has to continuously generate that novelty, that newness. This that we see, that people can make changes within things, and then once they make the change, and then they can part from that which, from the object which they made the change, and go away from it. A carpenter can make a table, then it can go away from the table, and the table continues to exist. So, because the carpenter is not really doing anything new to the table. A carpenter forms a table. The wood, all he did, he didn't create anything that wasn't here before. The very substance of the table, or in the example that he uses, a smith that is taking a piece of silver and is reshaping it into a nice kiddush cup or a menorah, that is not really giving anything new to it. He's just changing the image. He's just changing the form. He's not bringing anything new. And for that reason, he can go away from it. And he just makes the change and he goes away. And the thing can continue being that way without him being there. And as we explained last week, not only isn't he giving anything new to this substance, he's really the smith, the silversmith. Even the image isn't really new, because silver contains within itself the potential to stand in any form. It's bendable, it's pliable, and it has within the ability for it to be in any form, even before the smith came. The smith only brought out that potential into actuality. Since the thing inherently has that potential, and the smith isn't the one giving it that element, so that's why the smith can go away, and he can even be walking on the street, in the words that he uses, and the thing continues to exist, because it doesn't need that person to transmit that to it, because it has it on its own. So when he came and he gave it direction, but once he gave it, did his thing, he can leave. But not so is with creation. Because with creation, God gave something new to the world. Why did he give it? He gave it its beingness. It once wasn't, and it mamash wasn't there. And in that nothingness, there wasn't potential for there to be. Nothingness is nothingness. It's just plain nothing. And God got involved, and he made that from absolute nothing, something should come into existence. So he's creating a real chiddush, a real novelty. And being that Hashem is bringing something new into existence, that newness, that novelty, requires the force that is generating it to continuously be there to make that happen. And he says this will answer, this is an answer, for those heretics and non-believers, he calls them minim, who don't believe. Now these are, what kind of heretics? These are not people who are completely, complete atheists, who just believe that the world came into existence just out of an accident of some kind of whatever, bang, out of nowhere, that just created. They're not as silly as that, to be able to think that such a complex, perfect, organized world that is organized to such unbelievable precision and detail, that such a thing can happen by mistake without any intellectual being, that intelligent being that formed it and designed it. So they believe that there was an original force, but then their thought is that God is not involved anymore with creation. And for that reason, their problem that they have, their issues that they take with the Torah, is two things. First of all, in divine providence, they don't believe that Hashem is involved in the world. Really, most of these thoughts generally are not that intellectual mistakes. They begin as emotional things, because a person doesn't want to have to live his life in accordance to surrender to a higher being. You know, you come up with all kinds of explanations in which you can push God away. So the idea is that God is not involved anymore with creation. In the words of the it's a pasuk, Azav Hashem es ha'aretz, that Hashem has forsaken the earth. Why? Because they say, why does he have to be there? He created it, he made it, and now then he can depart. If that's the case, so then if Hashem is not here anymore and he departed, so the world just runs on its own system, by the laws of nature, by the laws of physics, whatever it is, that keep the world going, running its course. So they don't believe in Hashem's continuous providence over everything, and oversight over everything, or making things happen individually. And as a result of this, they disagreed in something else. They denied the miracles of the Torah. They denied miracles in general. They don't believe in miracles. And even the miracles of the Torah, where the Torah says that the splitting of the sea, the plagues of Egypt, and so forth, they say it didn't happen. And why? Simply. Because if God is not involved with the creation, so where do the miracles come from? See, a miracle comes if you believe that God is continuously involved in making. And see, it's not that they don't believe in the capability of Hashem, that Hashem should be capable. If he created the world, of course he can make a change. But they feel that Hashem doesn't mess with the world because he created it and he set it on its course. He put it into orbit, so to speak, and it's doing its own thing. So where should the miracle come from? But if you believe that what? That Hashem is continuously involved in everything and making everything happen. So when, because of a certain reason, Hashem wants to bring about a change, because it's needed at that time, God alters nature to accommodate his will, but to accommodate the Jewish people, whatever it is that Hashem wants to do. So miracles are very strongly, not dependent, but it's far likely to believe in miracles if you believe that nature too isn't just a force on its own, but nature too, Hashem is continuously running it. So again, so their denial was the denial of the miracles and the denial of Hashem's involvement. But the Tanya is saying, if we really get to the root of their issue, if we get to the root of their misunderstanding, of their philosophy, of their approach, the root of it is not that they're denying God's involvement in that they're denying hashgacha, divine providence, or denying the miracles. At the core of it is their understanding that the creation can go on existing on its own. That Hashem created it once, made it be, set the laws of nature, and it's set, and it can and it continues on its own. That's the root, that's the core of it. So there, so the Tanya is saying, explaining over here that really this mistake or this approach is really mistaken at its core. Because the reason they're making that mistake is because they're comparing God's work to man's work. And when man goes and does something, the carpenter or the smith or whatever it is when they're doing, the person just has to affect the change once, create it once, and then he can leave go of it. And the thing continues to be in that change state even without the person's being connected to it. And that's why they felt that God's work is also the same. Hashem's work is also the same thing. He made it and that's it. He can go. So he's saying no, but it's very different. Because what they're failing to realize is the fundamental difference that when people are doing things, they're only changing one form into another form. They're not adding a real chiddush. But Hashem is bringing the world from absolute nothing into existence. Since there is a real change, there's a radical change, there's something new being brought to the table. There's something truly new coming into existence. And that newness requires the involvement, the generator of that chiddush, of that novelty, to be there continuously to make that happen every second. Okay? Okay. Now, in order to prove this, I mean, it's quite logical, but in order to prove it from something that we can literally see that it is so, so he uses an example where we have a radical change taking place, and in that case, it was clear that the force that was causing that change to happen was continuously required to be there. And for there he's going to extrapolate or prove that in creation is the same thing. That by creation too, God, the divine life force, has to continuously vivify the creation. Okay. So what is the proof that he's going to use? So let's, in the second line, page 154. Hu pele gadol yoser. Now, creating the world and bringing the world into existence when Hashem created the world, that is even a greater wonder. That is even a far greater wonder, Mikriyas Yamsuf, from the splitting of the Red Sea. Al derech mashal, by way of analogy. If we're going to compare it to anything, he said, the good thing to compare it to is to a situation where we see something really new taking place. What's a situation where something new happened? By the splitting of the sea. What happened over there? Shehoylech Hashem esayam beruach kodim azam. That Hashem led the sea with a powerful eastern wind. It says clearly in Parshas Bishalach, by the splitting of the sea. It doesn't just say that God said, let it split. It says that a wind blew, and it says, Vayoylech Hashem esayam beruach kodim azo kol halayla. That Hashem led the sea with a powerful eastern wind the entire night. So there was a strong wind blowing, and it was that wind that was that. Of course, wind can blow from today till tomorrow and it doesn't split a sea. But it was the divine power to split the sea that found expression in the wind. And it was through the wind that that was applied to the sea and it caused the sea to split open. So over there it was called Alayla the entire night. By Yubaku Amayim and the water split. And what happened? Venitzvu, and it stood firm, Kamoy Neid Ukechoyma. It stood upright. The water held itself up. Neid is like when water is gathered together in a bottle or something. So the water stood. It's not spreading. So it can, see, it's just the right word. Neid doesn't mean a wall. Neid means just a gathering. Like Rashi translates the word in Chumash. So the water stood kemoy neid in a gathered state. Not... And like a wall. It took on a stationary existence. Stood standing. Now, that's what happened. The powerful eastern wind made, produced that effect. That the thing, the ilu, now he says like this. The ilu hifsek Hashem esaruach karega. And if Hashem would have interrupted or stopped that wind momentarily, the wind would have stopped, what would have happened? Hoya hamayim choizrim v'nigodim b'moidot k'darga v'tiva. Then the water would have reverted and to spill and to flow downward as it is its way and as its nature. This effect that the water stood stiff, strong, but during that night, it was clear that it was the eastern wind. How do you know that? Because it says so in the pasuk. It says the wind was blowing the entire night. If the wind was only needed, if what's it called again? It didn't continuously need the wind. It just needed for the just to slap the water, to hit the water, so that it will split. So then it should have just been wind at the beginning. For instance, we find that by the other makos, the locusts. The locusts were brought by the wind. So it says the wind blew, and the locusts came. Then the wind stopped. It's only when they had to drive the locusts out of Mitzrayim, so a new wind, another in the other direction came, and swept the locusts out, the Arba Adams. But over here, it wasn't just a wind came, a powerful wind, and split the water. It says that the wind was blowing the whole night. And that's for the whole duration of Kriyas Yamsuf. Because Kriyas Yamsuf started sometime in the middle of the night, till the morning. At the morning time, the water went back already and covered the Egyptians that had gone into the sea. But the whole night, the water was kept up by the wind. And he says it's clear that if that wind would have ceased, then the water would have stopped. The water would have gone back to their natural fluidity, to their natural flow going down. The loy kamu kechayma b'li safak, and it would not have stood like a wall without any doubt. It's clear from the pasuk that it was the wind that was causing it. Now, why? So from this, what is he proving from here? He's proving, you see, from this story, that when you have something that is doing something really new, here there's something new. Because water doesn't possess within itself that ability to stand firm or to have a stiff existence. There is such a thing as it freezes up, but that's when it's frozen. But regular temperature water, the water doesn't contain within itself that possibility. Water is fluid. And it runs. Now, what Hashem was doing was he was changing the water. Being that he was making a true change in the water, a real change, something novel was taking place in the water, that the water was now going to stand firm. So it required a continuous involvement of the force that was making it be opposite of its nature. And that was the wind that was continuously blowing and keeping the water up. So if this is the case in that miracle, that since there is something new taking place, it requires the force to be there continuously, so the same can be applied to creation. The natural state of existence is that nothing exists. That's its state. Just like the water is fluidy. The same thing, the natural, before God decided to want the creation, the natural is that the creation isn't. Hashem is bringing something totally new into beings. So the force that is making it to be is a perpetual thing that is required to be there all along to have this effect. That's his proof. That is proof. It seems to be quite simple. However, just the interesting thing over here that one needs to notice is, first of all, the Tanya he's now coming to prove this people who are, he starts from here, there's an answer. This is how he begins the chapter. Mikan tshuvas aminim. From here, there's an answer to the heretics, non believers, who don't believe in what? They don't believe in the miracles of the Torah. Because they believe that the world has a self sufficient existence. He created it, and then it has its power. So he says, well, how can you make that mistake? This, that something can exist on its own, is when a person does not making anything new. But since God is making something new in this thing, so it needs to be there always, like you see from the splitting of the sea. What do you mean, bring me a proof from the splitting of the sea? We're dealing with people who don't believe in what the Torah says. So if he says clearly, they're non-believers in the Isis and Life Simatera. So if they're non-believers in that, so how can you prove it from one of the miracles that are recorded in the Torah? That's itself what they're not believing in. So it's clear that the Rebbe over here, the Tanya, is not, he's not debating with these people. It's not his point over here to prove to heretics. I don't know if he thought that the heretics would be learning Tanya. So it's not that he's trying to prove and engage those people to believe. He is talking to believers, meaning he's talking to those who do believe in the Torah. He's just exploring their mistake. Those people who don't believe in the Torah, because they feel that what? That the miracles of the, that because they feel that the world has a self-sufficient existence, he says that's, and it's, from its very root is wrong. Because the comparison that they compare it to man's work is faulty at the very beginning, because it's not a comparison. What you should compare it to is to something that's new. Where do we have something that is truly new? Where do we find something that is truly new? So for that he says, well, I'll give you, for those who do believe in the miracles, he's just clarifying it and saying, you see, in that case where there was truly something new happening, where the water took on a different state of existence, which is unnatural to it completely, that change had to be brought about always. Okay? However, if this is the kavana, if this would be the intention of the Tanya, so you can ask a simple question. Why does he have to prove it from the Kriyas Yamsuf? Where then it would only be a proof for believers and not for non-believers. He can find other examples, even in, and not even things that happened in the past, but things that continuously take place where we can see this. There's a simple example where you see something like this. When you're changing something and making a true change in a certain entity, in a certain substance, the changing force has to continuously be there to cause that change. For example, when a person is throwing something, you're taking a stone and you're throwing the stone into the air. Okay. So now we see that what? That there is a force that the person generates when you're throwing a ball or a stone. You're projecting or creating a force. The stone isn't flying. Right? It is something pushing the stone, something carrying the stone. Man produces that force. That force carries the stone. Now what do we see? That how long does it carry the stone? Depending how strong you threw it. But the stone will fly as long as that power wears off. No, as long as it doesn't wear off. And once that power disappears and ends, so then the stone will go back to its natural state. The stone will go back falling. It won't continue flying. So what is causing the stone to fly? So here you're taking something and projecting it onto notice the stone by its nature is to go down. It doesn't have flight. What?
But if you take it in an empty space.
True. Because of the
water.
True, 1 second. True because of the laws of gravity. Fine. It's the laws of gravity that are pulling it down. But this, that it could be defying gravity now that there is gravity, okay? In the condition, in the present condition, this that it could be defying gravity is not within the stone. A person could jump, because a person has the ability to defy gravity to a certain extent, to push himself off, right? And the person has the ability to implement that power outside of himself, right? To project that power, that force, to work against gravity, okay? But the moment that force ends, gravity again, the natural state of the stone and its relationship to, you know, its effect that gravity affects it will be reenacted, as to say, will go back to its surrender, we should say, to the gravity.
Balanced.
What do you mean? Okay, but after everything is said and done, if you throw it stronger, it will fly further. If you throw it with less strength, it will end. Which means depending on how much strength you're projecting in it. Because that's how long you can be in. In other words, it's the koyach of the person, the power of the person, that is affecting a change. It's as long as that effect is there, it's there. When that effect ends, it stops. and gravity, okay, say call it gravity, that will take over and will pull the thing down. But still, you see that it's not that man can affect something and then it will just happen forever and ever. It won't be that way. Why? Because it's a chiddush. It's going against the natural. The natural is if it's a fall. And so that can be a good thing. Here you have an example. That when you're doing something new in an object, the power that is affecting it has to be there always. So why does he have to bring me an example from a kriya? And that would have been a proof for everyone. And that would have been a proof from something tangible, something that we all can see, not from something that happened way back then, that you have the wind that was blowing the Yamsuf continuously. I'm saying, yeah, it would have been a simpler example. Yeah, give me another example. If there's no, you mean source of light.
Yeah.
So the force that is generating that light has to be there. Yeah, there's another example. Okay, now. So the thing is like this. He's intentionally bringing this proof from Kriyas Yams. Because over here there is a far stronger question that one can ask and say like this. What is he bringing proofs of? He's bringing proofs from logic. That logically, if you're creating something new, that force has to be there always. Okay, that's nice. And this he wants to apply to creation. That by creation, we also have to say that God is continuously involved in creation, because when you're creating something new, you have to continuously recreate that newness. But hold it. How can we apply such a law to God? A law of science, a law, let's say, of physics. How can you apply this law to Hashem? See, it must be that when God created the world, this is the way he created the world. Since when is God bound by any of these laws of any of these logical laws? Yes. That's right. Who says Hashem has to be subject to that law? That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's the question. Where do we, the cloud, how can we even discuss this? And then, you know, from the way things happen by us or in the world, and then to say, well, you know, there's a difference here. You're making something new, and something new requires. Hashem is what we call a kol yachol. Kol yachol meaning he can do whatever he wants, and he can create something to exist without the power that's generating, and it should be something new. Because we know, and this is part of our emunah and belief, that Hashem transcends not just creation, but Hashem transcends all logic and all reason. He's not bound by any laws whatsoever. He created the laws of logic. So for instance, even a law like this, even things that are so absolute in our mind that's the way they are, they're not confining God. God is not bound by them. For example, this that we believe or know or make sense, that a father must be older than his son. Makes sense, right? If he's the father and he's the cause for the son, so he has to be older than his son. Could God have created such a situation where the son is older than the father? I don't mean aged, but literally older. And he is the son, which means the son comes from the father, right? The son, the child, comes from the father, and that's why he's the son. But at the same time, he is older than the father, which is absurd. And to us, it cannot be such a thing. There's a discussion in the Rishonim about that. Can God do things that are just absolutely make no sense? Can 2 + 2 = 5? Or does 2 + 2 have to be 4? So the Rajba proves from one of the miracles that were in the Beis Hamikdash, the miracle we spoke about in a Tuesday night class of the Aro that was space and not space at the same time. So he proves that God is not limited by any laws whatsoever, even those things that to us are just absolutes, they are absolutes because he created it this way. And he himself, and he could have created it differently, and it wouldn't have been this way. 2 + 2 couldn't have been, it could have been 5. Even though in our world, the way he created it now, this is the way it is. Now we can't figure, there's no way we can understand that because our minds are wired by these laws. When things are set this way, and this is the way it has to be, it cannot be any other way. But Hashem is not bound by it. If that's the case, even if this is an absolute thing, that if there's a new chiddush taking place, the koyach hamachadish, the power that is has to be there always, that's a law of logic. Why would that say anything on Hashem? So for, that is the reason why, it's interesting. This whole chapter, this whole explanation that he's explaining now is only chapter number 2, it's not chapter 1. In chapter 1, he explained the whole thing that this godly regeneration of creation every moment was explained in chapter 1, not by logic, but he brought Torah proof to that. This is what it says in the Torah. There's a pasuk. La'olam Hashem devarcha nitzav b'ashamayim. It's only after he says, and he brings it from the Torah, and he brings it from the Arizal, that everything has a soul in it, that's continuously even inanimate things. And there's a soul, the words of Hashem, that are creating it every second. It's only after that he approaches it from a logical perspective. Why is that? Because exactly that. On God, you couldn't say that he has to. He couldn't. Why didn't he start with chapter number 2? He should have began with this makes sense. It can't be differently. Why does he begin with Torah proof? And the answer is exactly that. Because if the Torah wouldn't have told it to us, that's the way Hashem created it, we couldn't deduce anything and place it on Hashem, because Hashem is not subject to any of our logic. And he could have done it as he wanted. But once we see in the Torah that Hashem did create the world in this way, once that is established, as he established it where? In chapter number 1. So now he's saying, well, by the way, it actually makes sense too, in the laws of physics, that such a thing should happen. True, God is not bound by it, but Hashem did choose to create the world in a manner that should make sense to us. Not everything, but as much as possible, that it should make sense to the mind. Which means by this law, that something that is bringing something new has to be there every second. And for that reason, he brings a proof, dafka, from Kriyas Yamsav. Because Kriyas Yamsav is a miracle. And if God could have made it that way, he could have made it in an illogical way. He could have split the sea without any, in a way that made no sense. Split it, even though he's creating something new to the water. And he could have done it in a way that he shouldn't be there. That it didn't need an eastern wind. It should happen once, and it should be that way. But he didn't do it. Why didn't he do it that way? Because as much as he doesn't have to tamper with logic, even the miracle, he chooses to do the miracle in a way. Again, God himself, the Abishter himself, could have done the miracle anyway. Didn't have to do it this way. But you see from there that he did choose to work with this parameters of logic, that if you're going to create something new, even though he's doing a miracle, but if you're going to create something new, you got to keep that force there, continuously changing the status of the natural status of the thing, and changing and altering it and making it different. So for that reason, he's dafka emphasizing this Kriyas Yamsuf. Because Kriyas Yamsuf is, this proof is a proof for believers, not for non-believers. It's precisely those who believe in Hashem, and as a result of their belief in God's omnipotence, Hashem can do whatever he wants, they would have a problem with what we're saying over here. So for that reason, he proves from Kriyas Yamsuf, and if you look carefully in the words, you see in the third line, he emphasizes that Hashem is the one doing it. Shoholech Hashem es hayam. Right? I'm just going back. That Hashem is the one who was leading the sea. Emphasizing that what? This is not a phenomenon in science or in physics. This is something that God was doing. And nevertheless, how did God affect that change? He did it in a manner that should make some sense. And that what? That if you're going to create something new, that newness has to be there in a continuous state. And again, in the end also, he says, "Ve'ilu hitzik Hashem es haruach." If Hashem would have stopped the wind for a moment. As mentioned earlier, another important point before we continue. when he's speaking about the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf, what did the wind do to the water? He says that the wind did, he says a double language. He says the wind came and it made it kimo nade. No nade, nade meaning the waters were like held up and restrained from spreading. And then he says, ukechoma like a wall. Now simply the way you learn it is, it's one thing. Kimo nade kechoma. It was held up like a wall. Like a wall is standing stationary. The water here too stands stationary. However, if so, what does he add above? Kimoinade ukechoma, like a nade and a chom. So that's why the explanation over here is given that kechoma and nade, the word kechoma is actually adding something new. He means two things. Nade and chom are two different things. Nade is, as mentioned quickly earlier, the water is a gathered together like when water is in a cup. So the cup is holding it together. It's in a vessel. The vessel's holding it. Kachoma means more than that. The waters itself became firm and solidified. Hardened. Not like, see, nade is like there's something holding it. Nade is like water in a thing that is in a container. But the water is still liquid. And it would still spill. It's only that there's an external force holding it. Kachoma means it has an essential stiffness to it. And rigidness that is just holding it's holding itself. And why is he saying both? Is because he's learning, for whatever reason, that by Kriyas Yamsuf two things happen. First, when the wind came, see the water was liquid, and the water is fluid. First, when the wind came and it cracked and it blew it open, the first thing it did is the wind was holding the water up, but the water is still liquid. Maybe for the first second, I don't know how long it took. The water was, and then there was a second inyan that happened. Not only did the water become kimonade, being held up by like by the wind, but the wind actually affected the water, that the water itself got its own stiffness. It was held up in a stiff manner, kechoma, like a wall. Now, why is that so important for here? It's getting into the details of how Kriyas Yamsuf took place. Kriyas Yamsuf was it just like the wind was holding the waters up, like a barrier, but the water was essentially still liquid? Or Kriyas Yamsuf took a step further, that the water became kechoma. Now, by the way, how do we know that it became kechoma? Simply can say it says so in the pasuk. It says nitzvu chomo neid. That's a pasuk. It also says v'hamayim lahem choma miyaminam u'mismaylam, that the water was a wall to the right and to the left. So you have a proof to it. There's another proof to it. It says that the water split into 12 passageways. So, if we say that it was just the wind blowing, one eastern wind blowing, so the eastern wind would split it in one spot. Unless there was, I don't know, maybe you could learn, unless there was the wind was like diving into the water in 12 different points, causing. See, if you learn that the water solidified and became hard, so again, the wind was actually changed the very nature of the water. That makes much more sense that there were 12 passageways because they became like bricks. The water became hardened like a wall. But if it was just the same liquid, it was just the wind was like, is pushing it, like when you blow on water, it gets like pushed to the side, and here was just a very strong wind that was pushing it. It's harder to imagine that it should be 12 different things from one wind. Okay, from whatever the reason of how he knew that that's what it is. Simply because so it says in the pasuk. But why is that important to discuss that over here? What happened to the water? But the truth is, it is very important. Because the reason why this, the idea of seeing and understanding the miracle, that the miracle happened kamo neid kamo choma, is actually the whole proof to prove his point, is dafka, is precisely from this that he adds, that not only did the water, was the water restrained, but that the water became hard. That's an essential part of what we're studying over here in the Tanya. To understand this point, to be able to apply it to Hashem. Because here's the thing. Chalal, you can ask a simpler question. Why does he have to prove the whole thing with Kriyas Yamsuf? You have a simpler proof. If you have a cup of water, Water is liquid. If you have a cup of water, what's happening? The water is being held in the cup. Break the glass. What's going to happen? It's going to spill. So you see that what? That here you're having a chiddush. Now the water really, by its essential nature, is what? Is spreads and liquid and would just run. Runs all over. What is containing it and holding it together? So you have a force, an opposite force, that is restraining the water from its runningness, from its flow. But over there you see clearly that that change has to continuously be there, holding the water up. You can't just put the wall around the water and then go away and the water would stay. No, it has to hold it up every second. So this can be the proof. That when you're doing something against the nature of something, that has to be there always. And the same when Hashem is creating the world. But if you think about it, it wouldn't be a proof at all. Because in the case where water is being held up in a cup, in a glass, the glass isn't having any effect on the water. Glass is only serving as a barrier. It's holding the water back. Not like the glass had a change, did something in the water, that the water changed. Water is the same liquid, same runningness. It's only blocking it from expanding and from continuing on. You can say, how is it a proof to Hashem to creation? When Hashem created the world, He made a real change in the thing. He made the thing be. He brought something truly into existence. And maybe if you bring something into existence, now once you brought it into existence, it can be on its own. It doesn't need that force. So the water in a glass is not really a proof, because the water in the glass isn't having any impact on the water. It's just stopping the water. But it's not that the glass is doing something into the nature of the water. It's not altering the nature of the water. But when Hashem created the world, He created something. He brought yesh. He brought something. Maybe when Hashem brought yesh me'ayin, He brought something into existence, so that something can go away, and the something can continue to be a something even without it. Because there wouldn't be a proof from that. That's why he needs to bring Kriyas Yamsav. But hold it. If we're going to learn that Kriyas Yamsav was what? That Hashem, the wind was only blowing, and it was the wind that was like the glass. And the wind was pushing the water, not letting the water remained liquid. The water remained fluidy. And the wind was only holding the water up, so then you have no proof. Because then the wind wasn't having any impact on the water itself. The wind was only holding the water. And if the wind is only holding the water, then why is there a proof? Because when Hashem created, he mamash brought something. He brought something into beingness, and maybe that being doesn't need the force. In the case where the wind is holding the wall, when the wind is holding the water, the wind is not impacting the water. It's only holding it. So of course, if it goes away, the water will go back to its natural state. But by Hashem, since he's making something yesh, maybe that yesh does not require it. That's why he says no. Kriyas Yamsav, there were two elements that happened by Kriyas Yamsav. First, the water went up like a nade. The wind happened. But then the wind had literally effect in the chemistry of the water. What did it do to the water? It caused the water to solidify on its own. It stood like a wall. A wall meaning without needing some outside, meaning nothing was holding it. It by itself stood rigid and firm and solid. Oh, so this is already a case where we, like Yesh Me'ayin, created something that the water is now firm and hard. And there was a true change in the water. So what? Nevertheless, even in this case, what do we see? The eastern wind had to be there all night to doing what? Causing this change in the water. Because why? Because water in its nature, the natural condition of water is to be runny and fluidy. This that the water is now stiff and hard is a change that's being brought about. The force that's causing this change has to continuously bring it. That was his the depth of what he's saying. Not only kemoined, kemochoma. It's like a wall, because it's only then that we have a good comparison to the creation of the world. Hashem brought something into existence. But this is a real change of the status quo. Because the status of the world without God interfering is that it doesn't exist. God is bringing it into existence. This radical change requires the force of change to be there continuously to make it be, just like by Kriyas Yamsa.
But if it's continuously standing, it's like a cup. It's just holding. So how is it contradicting?
But he's saying it's not that way. It's saying it's not what happened. He's saying that it happened kimo neid ukimo choma. From wherever he had proof to that. Maybe from this that it says v'amayim lehem choma. But it does say that the water was a choma. Choma meaning it was hard.
But
it was a womb. No, it doesn't say in the end it blew it again. In the end it just says, in the morning came, Vayashev Ayam Laisonai. Moshe Rabbeinu raised the staff. It says, and the water returned. It doesn't say there was another wind blowing. No, it's Papashtis, nothing happened. Do you Papashtis, you know what happened at the end? The wind just went away. When the wind went away, what happened?
So, but what about the name? What about the standing as a choma? If there's a change.
No, but even that change required a wind, the force that was making the change, to continuously make it. That's the whole point, that since this is changing the natural state of the water, true, it's standing on its own now, but it's not on its own, because water, the substance of water calls for what? For it to be running, to be running. This is a change that Hashem is now introducing to the water through the wind. That change has to continuously operate and affect it in order to bring about that change. Even when it's a panemius to get change in it, it requires a continuous involvement to cause that change. Yes, that's the whole proof. That's for it to remain as a why? Because this that water should be like a wall is new to water. That's something that water doesn't possess. Water doesn't have it within itself to have that. It's something that Hashem was now altering in the water. Since it was an alteration in the water, it required the continuous force to cause that change in the water. Because naturally, water doesn't have that. Water has its runningness to it. Yes. No, it does say that water in the world all changed, just to display the miracle that was happening at the Yam Suf. So you have to then ask, so what happened in all the other waters? Was there a wind blowing on every water? That's a good question, because the Medrash does say that when it split, Kol Meim Shaba Olam split. I don't know. It's a good question. The miracle was taking place over here, and over there was only to indicate or to be a sign. So did he make the miracle over there different than here? That's an interesting question. Okay. Now, I just want to... Now it continues. Now we said, if you looked at the... What?
It's supposed to be a double miracle beside the moon. Normally, when the moon is circling, in that side of the moon, it's a high tide of the water coming towards the moon, wherever the moon is. So if the moon it was night, and the moon was there, it would have been high tide of the water, and the wind expanding and opening the water, the additional is extra water. Instead of doing it in the middle of the day, that is low tide, it would have been easier.
I mean, once water is splitting, the water is a little more intense, a little less. The chidush. Now, the thing over here, okay. He mentions over here, and this is in order to be able to understand what he's going to say now. He mentions over here that really creation is even a greater miracle than Kriyas Yamsa. In the second line, he said, V'hu pele gadol yoysem Kriyas Yamsa. Even more wondrous than Kriyas Yamsuf. And if by Kriyas Yamsuf, which was less of a wonder, less of a change, nevertheless what? It required the continuous involvement of God to make it happen. How much more so by creation, which is even a greater change, it requires Hashem's continuous energy to produce this change. Okay? Now we have to only wonder why is the creation more wondrous than the splitting of the sea? Why is creation more of a wonder? You can say, well, come on, very simple. Splitting of the sea, you have already something. You have a sea. It's only that Hashem split the sea. But by creation, Hashem is mamish doing something from nothing. There's nothing here. So it's, of course, a bigger chiddush than that miracle. But if you think about it, Tanya didn't accept that just as is. Because if you think about it a little carefully, you see true that by creation there's something much greater happening. Nothing is here and Hashem is making it happen. But in regards to this one point, and that is the newness of the event, the novelty of the event, on that they're both exactly equal. Why? Because just like creating something from nothing, the world into existence, it is totally new. What do we mean totally new? In the pre-existing nothingness, there isn't there any possibility for the something. There isn't any even tiny little, isn't even a germ, a seed for the somethingness. There's nothing at all. So now there is a total change, a real transformation. It's very novel. Now hold it. By the splitting of the sea, as we said earlier, water that is liquid, doesn't have within itself even at all this nature of being, of standing, of being in a firm state. So it's also just as novel. So true, as we look at it in general, we say, the splitting of this, creation is a bigger chiddush than kriyas yamsav. It's a bigger novelty than kriyas yamsav. But not really. Because in this particular aspect of the newness, and what we're measuring over here, is the newness. And to prove that when you're doing something new, that newness has to, the force that is bringing that chiddush, that novelty into existence has to be there continuously. In that, they're both the same. Of course, in both cases, we're dealing with something absolutely new. And when it's absolutely new, you see that you need the force being there. However, the Tanya wants to say not only that this is the same like that, it's even more than that. This he's going to explain now. Why is it even more than Kriyas Yamsuf? Why isn't Kriyas Yamsuf on the same scale of newness, of novelty? Think the same thing? Because in both cases, you don't have any potential before. It's not like buy a cup. This cup has the potential to be like this. It has a cup with the potential to be flat. If you flatten it, it'll be flat. Now already it can be in a different position. But the water doesn't have it within it to be firm. So it's totally like Yesh Me'ayin, something totally new. So why is he saying that it's even more than Kriyas Yamsuf? So for that he's going to explain now. And he's going to say, really, creating the world is really much stronger than Kriyas Yamsuf. Why is that? So he says this is a very interesting question. This that we say that water is liquid and water runs, is that the first nature of the water, or is that something that is inherent to the very chemistry of the substance of water itself? Or is that something that was added on to water? What do we mean by that? Is like this. Is H2O, by its very nature, H2O is the formula of water. So is H2O by its very substance of what it is, a liquid thing? Or is it like this? No, God created water, whatever that substance is. And that substance could either be solid or can be, it could be liquid. And then he chose to add to it the liquidy nature and condition to the water. What? L'mayin afki mina, what difference does it make? If this is its first state or this is something added? Simple. If water, by its very, very essence, when God made water, it has to be liquid. It has to be liquid. That's just what it is in its essence. So then true, if Hashem would, by Kriyas Yamsuf, go and make it firm and hard, like we said before, kechoma doesn't only mean that it was being held up, but it itself was rigid and firm, that would be the same like Kriyas Yamsuf. Because that would be a total radical change. Because water doesn't have it within itself at all to be. It doesn't even have the possibility. Its very substance, from its core of its being, as it was created, and it is to be liquid and running. This that it was, that it's changed, Hashem is altering it completely. It's almost like creating a new water. And then it would be the same like creation. Or no, if water really, if we learn the other way, that water really could have been created, water has the possibility. I mean, the initial thing is Hashem created a substance of whatever water is. And that could have been hard, it could have been liquid. And then Hashem came and attached to it a nature of fluid, the nature of runningness. This was a second thing that came to addition to the water. Then, it's not really, then, to change it and make water stand doesn't contradict what water is in essence. It only contradicts the water's presence now. Now that God attached to it the liquid element to it, now it goes against what water is. In other words, but at the very root of what the substance of water at the beginning is water, does water have to be liquid? Let's put it this way. The certain natural phenomenon that is inherent to every physical thing by its very thing that it's a physical entity. For example, there is a rule that every physical object takes up space. That rule that every physical thing occupies space, that is a rule that it has to do with the very condition of a physical thing. God created something in the very physics of, in its very being, physical existence takes up space. It's not a nature that Hashem had added onto it. What's the proof? Every single physical thing has that nature, that it takes up space. So that's essential. How about the liquid element of it, that it's fluid? That's not essential to a physical thing. What's the biggest proof? Because other things don't have the nature of liquid. Stones are solid and strong and stiff. It's only that water is fluid. So you see the difference. Something that is that this rule in nature, that every physical thing takes up space, that is an essential element to its existence. If Hashem was to take a physical element and make it spaceless, like by the Aron, where when a physical object became spaceless, that's completely recreating it, restructuring its molecule. Not just restructuring it, because it's going even deeper than the molecule. Because any way you're going to put together the molecules and any structure, it's still going to occupy space. It's under digging the very notion of its physicality. That's a real chiddush, a total chiddush. But over here, the Rebbe is saying, this that water is liquid is not essential to the very, very, very water. The proof? Because other physical things don't have that nature. Other physical things, like a wall, stands. It's only that why? Then Hashem created various different physical substances. And to one of them he attached the nature of solidness. And to another one he attached the nature of fluidness. Being that that's the case, he says, and now we understand that what? That this that Hashem made the water be at Kriyas Yamsuf hard is not going against its very grain of what the thing is. It's going against the second nature that he attached to it, but not against its core element. And for that reason, creation ex nihilo, creation when Hashem created the world, yesh me'ayin, something from nothing, is a greater chiddush, a greater change. because this is a real chiddush. Over here, Hashem is just changing one nature for another nature. He's changing the nature of liquid to the nature of solid. But it's not a real, real true chiddush. It's only true. It's only new to the water in as much as the water has been already, and as much as Hashem had already attached the liquid element to the water. But in essence, water could have been that way. And since that's the case, you're not really changing it that much. And that's why, it's not. The point is, it's not as radical. The change is not as extreme.
Because either liquid or solid, it's still H2O.
That's right. Either way, it's still, I'm not sure H2O, because maybe the science, because I'm not familiar with the chemistry of why it's called H2O. Could be in the scientific term of what water is, H2O, they are already taking into consideration the chemistry of it being a liquid. I'm not exactly sure. I don't know. But what we're saying is, on a deeper, on a more essential level, the very substance of water could have been in a solid state. It's only that Hashem later added. And that's how he's learning that's the way it is with the water. And it's because of that, it's not as a chiddush. But we're going to leave that for next week.